I'm Dan Lovato. Brad is on vacation. It'll be off next week, too. He has earned it. We've been focusing on the big election, which takes place on February the 28th. That's next Tuesday. And we have another candidate in our studio today seeking this second senatorial district seat, Aaron Romano. Aaron, welcome to Brad and Dan.
Well, good morning, Dan. I'm upset to hear that Brad is unavailable. I hope he sent in his absentee ballot and voted the right way for next Tuesday.
Well, he lives in the second district.
That's
so.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So now you're a write-in candidate. Define that.
So when you're a write-in candidate, you're not appearing on the ballot. The way the ballot is going to be set up today, or on Tuesday, rather, is the Democrat will appear by name, the Republican will appear by name, and there will be a blank space where you have to write my name in. Because I'm running as an independent.
Okay. Now, you had sought the Republican Party nomination, is that right?
I actually went to both parties. I have a progressive platform that has not changed, and I approached the Democrats first, and I approached the Republicans afterward, and neither party wanted to adopt the platform. I think it was they wanted to run establishment candidates. And so they went forward with their establishment candidate.
Define progressive.
So, for instance, I've been a lifelong Democrat. And the reason I came into the political arena was because the announcement that the Dems wanted to, in order to balance the budget, cut educational spending by $20 million. And that, to me, was just unconscionable to think that if you can't balance your checkbook, you take it from children. And so, you know, that's just not something that we live by, not a principle we live by. And it's certainly not a principle that the Democratic Party would live by. And so I felt like, especially with this last election, the results of last election, that there are a number of people within the Democratic Party who are progressive and do not agree with many of the decisions that the Democratic Party is making locally.
So if you were in state government, if you were in the state Senate, let's say you win this election on Tuesday,
When
the election on Tuesday, how would you balance the budget? I mean, we are in a budget crisis perhaps like none other the state has ever faced.
Well, one of the things that we have to take a look at is alternative revenue streams. We can't just keep on raising taxes, and we certainly can't cut programs for the most vulnerable in the population. Right now, the Democrats are proposing cuts on senior housing, Medicaid for drug treatment programs and mental health programs. That's not the way to do things. You have to take care of those who are most vulnerable in the population. The AARP recently came out with objecting to the current budget proposals and cuts. An alternative revenue stream means you don't look toward people to raise taxes. You do something else. One of the proposals I have is to legalize cannabis. That's worked in many, many states. It's coming down the pipe, but we have to do it in an intelligent way. The state has already legalized medical marijuana, but when they did that, they created a monopoly where only four licenses were granted. And a requirement for the licensees, this is actually a requirement, is that the licensees post a $2 million bond with the state. So you can imagine that eliminated small businesses and minority business representation from the cannabis industry. If we do it intelligently, and we do it in a way where small businesses can be involved and create uniform licensing throughout the state, we will raise tax revenue, of course, because people will be buying it over the counter. But more importantly, it will create jobs. It will create jobs for people who are skilled and unskilled workers. It will create jobs for the carpenters and construction people who will do the build-outs for the grows and for the dispensaries. It will create additional revenue for landlords who will be renting out space to grows and dispensaries. So it has a trickle-down effect within the economy, not just the direct cannabis sales, which many people just look at in Colorado and they say, oh, the tax numbers from the direct sales. But we have to look at something more important than just the tax numbers, the job creation and the job growth.
I've had people tell me that if you look at the, and even the governor said this, the social cost of legalizing marijuana, that any revenue the state might gain would be offset and then some by the social cost.
That is a very dated approach to the whole issue. There is no social cost. This past election cycle, more people came out to vote in favor of voter referendums to legalize cannabis than any political election for a candidate.
No, but they're talking about the social cost in regards to people become addicted, the cost as far as treatment, and the fact it could be a gateway drug.
So it's a gateway drug only when it's illegal, because people have to go to the illicit market in order to obtain cannabis, and then in the illicit market, you're then exposed to other illicit substances. If it's regulated properly, and the state is regulating it and controlling its distribution, the numbers and the statistics have shown in Colorado that actually driving while under the influence have decreased, teen use has decreased. So we actually have statistics that we can look at. I understand what the governor is saying, but again, it is a very dated, outdated.
But you know
opinion.
What the problem is with this, Aaron, and I think you understand it. I could bring in somebody today, right now, who is opposed to the legalization of marijuana, who would be able to refute the statistics. In other words, each side presents statistics and says, these are these statistics, and they use it to support their opinion. So in other words, who's to say your statistics are more correct than the statistics of those who are opposed to legalizing marijuana?
Well, I'll tell you, if we want to take a look at the social cost, let's break it down to something very simple. How many people have died from cannabis use? There is not one recorded death from the use of cannabis. How many people have died from the use of alcohol? Countless, countless people. Now, the only deaths that there are related to cannabis are violent due to the illicit market. Once you remove the illicit factor from it, you remove the risk of harm. Now, obviously, there has to be education along with it. And we also have to examine why we think that cannabis is, or why the people who think that cannabis is bad, why they think that. Who told them that? Who taught them that?
Dan Lavalla with you, Brad on vacation, Aaron Romano, write-in candidate for the Connecticut 2nd District Senate race, and the election is next Tuesday. Joining us in studio, Mayor Mark Mountain. The mayor of Danbury joins us at the bottom of the hour, also Doug Evans later in the hour. Now, just to wrap up our marijuana conversation, you want to legalize marijuana. How much revenue would the state derive?
Well, Dan, just to clarify, I think the majority of people in Connecticut, residents in Connecticut, want to legalize cannabis. It's not just an opinion that
But polls have shown that. You're right about that.
Absolutely. Yep. So the estimated revenue just from the taxes alone is $100 million annually. And so the governor's proposal now to cut programs for the most vulnerable of the population is just misplaced. That is not the way to do things. We have to look at alternative revenue streams. We can't just keep on raising taxes. We have to look at this alternative revenue stream because, like I said earlier, it will create additional jobs outside the industry as well.
So the state is facing, in the first year of a two-year budget, a 1.7, or depending on who you figure you read, $1.6 billion deficit.
Right.
So that's $100 million.
Exactly.
Where are you going to come up with the rest?
Well, that's a good question. I think there has to be control there on spending itself. If we take a look at the way the Dems have been spending for the past 6 years, they've been spending on construction projects rather than investing the money into people. So we take a look, we see a pattern. I know that the Hartford Stadium wasn't a state project, but we take a look at what the Dems have proposed, building a stadium, putting $250 million to the Excel Center, building additional schools. Well, every time you build a building or you have a construction project, you're required to maintain that building from that point on. So it really sucks additional money from the budget. However, if you readjust your priorities and you invest in my proposals, to invest in education, that is an investment in people. And we all know, because we encourage our children to go off to college, continue their education. Why? Because they invest in themselves and they increase their own earning potential. So if we invest in our children and we invest in our education, we take that amount of money that we're putting into buildings and put it into the schools, we will have world-class schools. Not going to be a hockey team, not going to be a baseball team. That's going to bring people to Connecticut. It's going to be world-class schools that will encourage people to move to Connecticut because we'll have the most educated population aging out of the schools, being able to be in a competitive marketplace, creating jobs.
But there's a cost to that. How much more should we be investing in education when we invest billions already as a state?
We have to shift our priorities from building, and that's what I'm suggesting, and put it into education. The money is there. It's just how we spend it.
You're also out to for affordable senior housing. How do we get affordable senior housing?
Well, right now, I'm reading from an article in the Connecticut Mirror. It was very critical of the Dems' proposal to cut services to seniors. Their proposed budget will erode, and I'm quoting, and this is the Connecticut Mirror is quoting from AARP, which is very critical of this, and I noticed the AARP sponsors WDRC. The budget erodes programs from prescription drugs to nutrition programs and more, which makes it possible for seniors to afford to stay at home and avoid more costly institutional care. So what it appears as if it's going to do is it's going to tell seniors that they need to deplete their funds, but then we will end up spending more because they will be in institutions rather than being able to be at home and receive home care. That just doesn't make any sense. If we can create that, if we can ensure that seniors are independent and provide them with the services that they need at home, that is certainly less costly than paying for institutionalized care for seniors.
I see where you want to ban toxic plastic packaging and toys. How is that a state issue?
Oh, well, California did that. It's very important because we see what's happening in our environment. There are other alternatives to packaging that are safer for the environment, safer for us. We see that when the foods are heated up in plastic wrapping or wrappers, the wrappers themselves and the chemicals in the wrappers leach into the food. We ingest that, and we see high rates of cancer and other diseases. So we have to look out for our citizens and make sure that we can do what we can to ensure their health, because that cost, obviously, is going to come down to taxpayers, and we have to pick up the tab for cancer treatment.
So you went on Tuesday as a write-in candidate without a party affiliation. Which party would you side with in the Senate?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of people have asked me that. Now, the party that I've explained to people that I'm affiliated with is the Citizens in the 2nd District. So my job is to be a representative and be an advocate for the people in the 2nd District, those who opposed me, those who feel ambivalent, and those who are supporting me, all of them. They are the citizens. That is my party. So moving forward, the decisions that I make will be based on the issues, not the party platform, not a Democratic platform or Republican platform. So the citizens in the 2nd District will be assured that the issues that they care about will be addressed in the state capitol.
As I said, the state is facing massive deficits. Do you support raising taxes to help balance the budget?
I think, as I stated earlier, we can look at alternative revenue streams. That is the way to go. We have to look at alternative revenue streams. Right now, the governor is opposing legalization. There's not enough movement with legalization of cannabis. It has to be done the right way to create jobs, to encourage small businesses to be involved. That's the way to.
But if you legalize marijuana, that's just $100 million. What are other revenue streams?
So there's another revenue stream. We can look at bail reform. I have a plan that's kind of complex, but what that would mean is people would pay into the court system as opposed to using bail bondsmen, and they would receive a receipt for the bail that they pay into the court system. That receipt could then be a negotiable instrument that they could use to pay for a lawyer as well. So that would save taxpayers in terms of having to pay for public defenders, and it would save taxpayers because the court system every day would receive tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars in bail money that could then be used for projects.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from. People might not know about you.
Sure. I grew up in, born and raised Bloomfield, Connecticut, graduated from Bloomfield High in class of 89, very proud of it. I went away to school at Bard College and then graduated from the University of Pennsylvania School of Law. And since graduating from the University of Pennsylvania School of Law, which is an Ivy League law school that encourages people to go in the corporate world, I chose a career in public service. So for 19 years, I've been one of those years I was a prosecutor. And 18 years, I've been a criminal defense attorney. Much of the work that I do is indigent defense. That means I'm representing people who can't afford a lawyer. And I feel as though this is an important civic duty. When you do have that privilege, and you do have that higher education, you have to give back to the community. And one of the reasons I'm running, aside from, as we mentioned earlier, the Democrats' proposal to take money from children, $20 million, is the fact that I've seen all too often the same story in representing clients. Clients who are, they grow up in families where drug abuse is rampant, violence is rampant, and when you're dealing with someone who's accused of murder, you're dealing with a case where there's a victim as well. And so there's no winner in these cases. Everyone is losing, and something has to be done. And there have been no improvements And so right now, with the Democrat who's running, he says he's been there for 12 years. Look around. There have been no improvements in 12 years. Something has to change. I've been an advocate in court, very successful advocate. I've won a lot of cases. I want to advocate for the people in the 2nd District in the Capitol.
How do we break this cycle, particularly in our inner cities?
Again, it goes back to education. We have to make schools the center for not just a learning center, but a community center for the children. Not many children have the luxury of going home to a family or a situation that is a safe environment. So if we put more money into the schools, we have appropriate after-school programs that reinforce what's learned earlier in the day, that provide some meal assistance, and provide a safe environment for the children. They need to feel comfortable in school, value education, and that is the key. When you're educated, you learn to use your words and not your fists.
You know, when I hear, Aaron, from the other side, particularly those who live in suburban areas who are now, they've seen their towns manage their local finances well, and now they're having a difficult time making ends meet, paying their property taxes, because they see more and more of the money going to the cities, going towards education, and they say, you know, why do I have to pay not only for education, but for after-school programs, for meals for a lot of these kids after school, when I'm working two or three jobs in order to pay my property taxes?
Well, that's a good point. But we all live in a state, and we all have different needs. And much of the education budget, anyway, is coming from local taxes. So the state should be picking up the tab where local taxes are not enough. The impact on the economy in terms of not putting money into education is just going to mean that we're going to end up putting money in the Department of Corrections.
Martin, out of time, so let me ask you one question along the lines of education. I've talked to parents, responsible parents who live in inner cities who support school choice. Where do you stand on that issue?
So the people I've spoken to, and it was enlightening, the people I've spoken to in the 2nd District, I think the majority of them oppose charter schools. What they want to see is they want to see neighborhood schools improve for a number of different reasons, because we don't have time, we can't go into that. But that, in my opinion, has been the feedback that I've gotten in the 2nd District, and that's what I would support.
10 seconds left, a final word. Go ahead.
Okay, so on Tuesday, you've got a write-in Romano. Remember, write-in Romano, the write-in candidate, the right candidate.
Aaron Romano, our guest, thanks for spending some time with
us. Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.